This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jason. Together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. And we're both feeling cheated still after that earlier topic. Go and download the podcast if you missed that episode on the BFM app. Now, sticking with that theme, apparently, though, this is very interesting. So Apple made headlines in the news because of the iPhone X and the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus. Actually, the 8 and 8 Plus never made it into the news. It was all just the X. But what was interesting...
Just the 8 and the 8 Plus are just the 7 and the 7 Plus.
Yeah, I found one article that described it really well. The 8 and the 8 Plus is the underachieving middle child of Apple.
Well,
because it's a really good phone.
Sure.
But, no limelight.
But it's kind of like the 7.1.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a small, tiny little upgrade. Well, what's interesting, Matt, sticking to your topic about, you know, we're buying phones on a yearly basis and it comes down to, you know, the manufacturers, the suppliers. Very interestingly, just a few days before Apple launched the iPhone X, Apple is actually part of an ongoing class action lawsuit in the US over a premature widespread failure of tens and thousands of iPhone 6 and 6 Plus devices due to a design flaw that has become known as a touch disease. So they're in court because a lot of people are saying that Apple is making a product that could only last for a year and it is wrong. However, it is very tricky in the area where Apple, a few days after that, they came out and they announced, like, oh, we are now launching the iPhone 8 Plus and the iPhone X, the iPhone 10, which has the hardest ever glass material on a phone. But in the design-wise, you know, your warranties, for them, Apple's decision is that we're giving you a phone that has a one-year warranty. That is our game in the sense that we're only going to make a phone that lasts as long as our warranty does it for you.
Yeah.
That's for me, it's like, wow, that goes back to the whole element of the hardware is fine.
Well, again, I think there's a couple of things going on here. Firstly, I've been telling my lawyers for ages that I have touch disease, but so far, apparently it's not a medical diagnosis.
Not a medical diagnosis.
You know. No, there's a few things going on here. When you buy a product, okay, you accept what the manufacturer's warranty is. So if they offer 1 year, then you take 1 year. If anything happens to the device outside that period, which is related to wear and tear, that's fine. That's the contract that you entered into with the company. They might be able to extend that warranty. In fact, you can buy extended warranties from Apple, which suggests that the products should work longer than a year. But the thing with this touch disease is, it's the issue of whether it is a manufacturing or a design flaw. And this is the area that's a little bit shady, I think. I would say morally that a company has an obligation to replace devices if they fail because of a design flaw. Because then I could deliberately put a design flaw into any product to cause it to fail. And also, you know, if I provide a service for a customer and they're not happy with that service or they don't like my work. You know, as normal people, if we deliver work that is not of the correct standard, it contains a design flaw, we will be penalized for that.
Yeah.
So we seem to be held to a higher standard than a lot of the technology companies are, or a lot of companies in general. And I think it's the onus is on these companies to actually own up rather than wait for lawyers to determine who is liable for this or that. It's
just
the
say
onus
it out.
Is say, you know, it's going to cost the company money, but we messed up.
Yeah.
Here's a replacement device. You know, honestly, like the story before, it annoys me that we've got to this point where people are simply being exploited because companies have a lot of power and a lot of money that allows them to kind of wield this influence against us.
Mm. And speaking of, like, you know, how apparently the story goes as into, you know, Apple, the iPhone is guaranteed to only last for 1 year, and Apple is arguing in court that no, you know, it's we cover for the warranty for a year. Beyond that, it's, you know, it's it comes back to that, you know, is it a design flaw? Is it a manufacturing flaw? If it's a design flaw, then, you know, Apple should be whole, you know, against whatever they say. Moving forwards, though, Samsung is planning to do something really crazy in the sense that they're trying to change the game altogether.
Well, this is, I think, well, obviously it's deliberate on Samsung's part that this story came out
just in the right time.
Yeah, in the right time frame. But when you look at the iPhone 10, yes, it is a really nice phone, but it's not an essential phone.
Could
it
come out last year? Like you mentioned.
Yeah, like I said, yeah. There's no reason that we couldn't have seen something like that last year. So what Samsung is saying is that by 2018, they will be putting out devices with foldable screens. Mm. Now, that's actually huge news. Mm. We don't know what the details will be, but potentially that means you could have a smartphone that transforms into a tablet. Yeah. So it means your screen size could double or triple depending on how the kind of origami of the screen is put together. Now, this kind of screen has actually been around for a few years. It's been in prototypes, I think, since about 2013.
Mm.
The problem is making these kind of flexible screens long-lasting enough, durable enough for the kind of use we put them in, putting them in pockets and
taking them
out.
So it comes down to the design itself now, right?
It comes down to miniaturizing the components and actually making them robust enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an industrial design decision rather than a technology one. And Samsung already has flexible screens.
They're not the only ones. I think LG has their flexible display, and, you know, they showed it around a few years. No, Samsung's quite innovative in that sense.
Yeah, because Samsung's one, you can actually change it from a straight TV to a curved one. You can
bend the TV, turn
the edges. Now, again, we haven't been given any real details of this product. They're keeping very, very quiet. So we don't know what the problems they're facing are because they've said, you know, they still have hurdles to overcome. But we don't know what those hurdles are. But the fact that we could have this kind of folding screen, which really is something out of sci-fi.
Oh, Westworld.
You know, Westworld, the TV show, uses those kind of things, or Minority Report, or, you know, it really is that kind of level of technology.
Yeah.
That's what we needed from the iPhone X this year.
Mm.
That would have been the step forward. That would have been the game changer, not 23% more battery.
Well, but, you know, Apple's game is always just, you know, it goes back to your term. They are just basically dripping you.
But it didn't used to be. We've gotten into this incremental cycle. And that's why I think this Samsung announcement is actually really huge. Mm. Because
and timely.
Well, huge and timely. But also it will transform the way that we use devices because you can carry around a phone that is a tablet and potentially a full computer as well.
Mm.
So, you know, it's suddenly converging a lot of devices into one single kind of frame, which is a huge jump, which we haven't seen for, you know, maybe 5 years right now.
Yeah, and speaking of technology, we love new technology, but we also love old technology. And it actually brings a lot of pain using old technology in today's world. And it's a clear example here because there's a report from The Guardian that says NHS, or the National Healthcare Service, they use 10% of the world's pages at an annual cost of £6.6 million. So apparently more than 1 in 10 of the world's pages are being used by the NHS. That's a staggering amount for a pager. I bet you, if you go up to any kid who was born, I think, 95 and above, would not know what a pager was. Like,
no, of course, most people haven't seen a pager, but I think this is an example of statistics.
And mindset as well, because the reason why they're still using pagers is because we don't see phone calls as a priority anymore. And then you go like, that is actually really true, because one of the reports here that states that the reason why a doctor would still use a pager is because they do not support a two-way communication. It's just a one-way communication where you get a page saying urgent and you need to respond. You can't take a note down. You can't leave a message and I'll respond to you later. You can't do it.
You can't, but there is a reason that the pages have been used. And that's why I said the statistics here are a little bit misleading.
Mm.
The market for pages has shrunk so much that, you know, a guy with a pager in your condo could be 1% of the world's users.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's not a lot of people using it. So a large institution like the NHS. And again, that figure of £6.6 million, when you consider the NHS's budget runs to billions and billions and billions of pounds, £6.6 million is actually... That's an accounting error. That's not even something that they would look for fraud behind.
Mm.
But the reason they use the pagers still is because it's a very robust technology.
Oh, yeah.
You can put a battery in a pager and it will last for months. Yeah. But it also works very well inside hospitals. Hospitals have lots of corridors, lots of rooms, lots of equipment that might be shielded from other telecommunications.
Certain frequencies aren't allowed and all.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So these things work very, very well. So they're very good at notifying doctors or medical staff of things that they have to respond to instantly. No, it's not the best system, but in terms of ease of use and tried and trusted and functioning and simple, those things, you know, it all works very, very well. The alternatives, I'm not sure if they are going to work as well. I mean, if you're WhatsApping a doctor and saying brain hemorrhage in operating, you know, and he's in
it's not going to work. Yeah.
And he's in a 3G dead spot in, you know, some cupboard on the mortuary floor.
Yeah.
You know, you have to bear these things in mind. But it is a fun story. And yes, I think it is time that they overhauled it. But I think the way the story's been presented is a bit misleading.
Yeah, but I do feel that is kind of true in the sense that, you know, they were saying that apart from a fast bleep, doctors have no sense of urgency or a priority of a call, ending up writing down messages that can be lost. Often they find a telephone number, engage when they do answer it. And pages gives them like, it's the last line of defense in that sense. Where you could still get... I'm sure there's a new technology somewhere.
I agree with you. But like I said, at the same time, if you WhatsApp a doctor and say, crash cart to room 13, that's not going to work terribly well either.
Nope. Anyways, we'll go for a short break and we'll be right back with more stories. There is no king of the crowd because we are feeling cheated by technology companies. So no king of the crowd, no down in dumps. Everything is down in the dumps for
today.
This week. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
And we're back with Geek Squawks. My name is Jess Under, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Now, Matt, apparently air pollution has got something to do with the way how bugs are colonizing our airways.
No, this is a really cool story, actually. This is from research at the University of Milan in Italy. They've been looking at the colonies of bacteria in our airways, specifically in our nasal passages, but if you do have a nasal package out there, please send it to Jeff at BFM.
No.
You can find the address on the website.
It's at Culture Pop Up.
Precisely. So nasal passages, and what they found is that the level of air pollution actually responds to the colonies of bacteria that we have in our airways. So they found, for example, that in high levels of air pollution, some of the healthy bacteria in our nose had died off and left larger colonies of bacteria that were likely to cause upper respiratory tract infections. Now, one of the reasons that this is kind of an emerging area of research is, like the bacteria in our gut, we don't necessarily know fully how bacteria work to kind of influence our system, our nervous system, and our health. But it's very interesting to find this kind of correlation. So there is direct proof that when we're in kind of unhealthy environments, it is actually killing off the defenses in our body that stop us from getting sick. So the pollution may not cause the illness, but it's allowing these things to colonize within your body.
That actually could be very possible. In fact, like, come think of it, like, a lot of major cities are always infested with, you know, diseases that, you know, you go like, wow, that never happened 20, 30 years ago. And it's not actually down to the pollution sometimes. It's the surrounding of it, the bacteria that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's this, you know, causation and correlation thing. You know, when very often, especially when it comes to lawsuits against polluters or whatever, you get the defense saying, well, you know, can you prove a link between this product and the diseases that come? This is helping us to make those links. We've long suspected that these things are the case, but now we're actually finding, the research is starting to show that there is proof there, that there is direct correlation, that there is causation.
It's an ecosystem at the end of the day, right? I mean, bacteria are part of the ecosystem, so they would evolve just like how we would.
But the pollution we're adding shouldn't be part of the ecosystem.
No. That should stop. Yeah.
So that's the thing that is degrading our own ecosystem, internal ecosystem.
All right. Now, I found this story on Engadget, and I actually love this. I would love to see something like this happen here just to see how people would react. So cybersecurity firm Kaspersky Lab, they ran a pop-up shop in London, and it's called the Data Dollar Store. Inside the store is just like any regular merchandise store that sells t-shirts, mugs, screen prints by street artist Ben Ainey. Now, the catch is, though, you don't actually pay with money. You pay with data. And me and you, Matt, we've spoken about this, I think, ever since Geek Squawks ever even begin, like, years ago. Of data is the money that, you know, these guys like Facebook and Google
It powers use. The system. It is the currency.
Yeah, and we don't see it until something like this happens, where you set up a store and they're actually giving out things that they would give out for free anyways. These are generally products that, you know, Kaspersky was saying that these are just a mix of products that generally they would give out in a goodie bag. But it was so interesting to see how people would react to it when you put it into a retail store and it asks you for data as an exchange for the item. So one of the examples here is that in order to buy a mug, you got to give them 3 photos or screenshots of your WhatsApp, SMS and email conversations to Kaspersky. To buy a t-shirt, it had to be the last 3 photos on your camera roll, so you cannot be selective, or the last 3 messages on your phone. For the original print, they force you to hand over the phone and the member of a staff will actually poke around and he would select 5 photos and 3 screenshots. Of course, you can barter with them, but at the end of the day, it is their choice of what they want from you. And with that, though, there was a mix of people apparently going to this. Some were prepared and they kind of knew what they had, so they came in with like a brand new phone or with, you know, they've already cleaned up their phone, so they don't not worry. But for the regular people who just walked into the store, you would think twice. And immediately then you go like, aha, now you know.
Absolutely. I mean, it does help to call attention to the amount of information that we give to companies. Yeah. It's a really nice illustrative example. Yeah. But a few weeks ago, I was on a panel discussion and there was an American lady called Amy Zalman who was on the panel with me. And she was talking about a future where rather than us giving our data to Facebook, we will be selling our data to all
change
of these companies.
Around.
Yeah, change it around. We'll be selling our data in exchange for services. Now, I don't really like that version of the future any more than I like giving away our data for free. I would rather we actually got to keep our data largely private. Yeah. I think most people would prefer that. But yes, it does help to show people what is actually involved. Yeah. I mean, I think I said on the show before, I asked people in the audience at that event if they were willing to pay for Facebook. And pretty much all of them said no.
Yeah.
But they are paying for Facebook.
Yeah.
And they use Facebook to organize their lives. Yet they're not willing to pay what they'll pay for a coffee
risky.
Or a hamburger or whatever. Exactly. When you give your data, it's actually far more valuable than if you were just paying a subscription fee for the product.
I would love to see something like this happen. And if it doesn't happen anytime soon, actually, I would love to plan and organize something like this happening here in KL and like just see how people would react, because we love free stuff here in Malaysia.
We do. But at the same time, I think, you know, it's the fact that the company behind it is Kaspersky Lab, which is, you know, an antivirus and a data protecting company.
Yeah.
If it was just Joe who wants your data in exchange for a free t-shirt, I don't think I'd be up for that.
Yeah, that's true though. It has to be a legitimate reason, and the company behind it has to be, you know, you're doing it as an awareness, not to actually use the last three photos on my phone and use it for something else.
I mean, if you see, you know, that it's being operated by dark web resources, Sindhuri and Bahad,
stay away. But it is interesting. Ask yourself though, would you trade in for like a brand new t-shirt that you see on H&M or Zara or any other of those retail stores, instead of paying them, you know, 15, 20 ringgit, would you give them your phone and let them play around and let them decide what they want from your phone, whether it's, you know, photos or screenshots or WhatsApp text, and you could get it for free? Ask yourself that question, and if you say no, then think of Facebook and Google.
But
right?
In a sense, we already do that. I mean, for example, I think I went into one chain that was either H&M or Uniqlo or something recently, and it said there was an e-members special.
Oh, yeah.
So if you go up to the till and you hand your phone to the cashier and they can see that you're a member of the Facebook page, you get a 25% discount.
I did that too, yeah.
You know, so we are, in a sense, in a sense, we're already doing that.
Yeah. Anyways, before we wrap up Geek Squawks today, Matt, we've got one more story. I don't seem to have a problem with this because I'm slightly of a younger generation here, Matt.
Yes. No, this isn't actually an age-related
item. No.
I thought we'd end with this because we've been so doom and gloom. This is actually an example of the technology being used to empower
people. This is what we want.
This is what we want. So this is a very, very simple device that's been created at the University of Quebec in Canada. It's a pair of wearable sensors that actually measures your posture. So if you're in a job where you have to do a lot of heavy lifting, you can be in serious danger of long-term chronic back pain or all kinds of injuries. So what the sensor does is you put it inside your shoe. It's very unobtrusive, and it kind of tracks your posture, and it will simply send out an alert if you're trying to lift something up and you're in the wrong biomechanical position. So there's not much to the story. It's pretty much just that.
But I just
wanted to end because this is an example of technology being
empowering.
Used very simply. Empowering. Yeah. It's used to improve people's lives. It's taking jobs that are difficult and hard and have take a real toll on the human body. Mm. And it's trying to reduce some of that impact and give those people a longer and better life.
Don't you already have something similar device where it detects if you're slouching or, you know, your posture isn't right?
Yeah, I mean, I have something like that. That's it's called a lift.
You
just wear it on your t-shirt or your shirt, and it's very simple and straightforward. If you're leaning forwards towards the computer, it vibrates. This is a bit more advanced because it's actually tracking your entire posture, and it's tracking you as you bend down to pick something up. Yeah, so that's not something my device would be able to do, but it is a really fun, nice little thing.
All right, let's move on to Geek Tunes. Matt, what do we have? The Babe Rainbow.
Yeah, I don't know much about this band. They are they appear to be a bunch of hippies from Byron Bay Australia. But I just found this song kind of fun and charming. This is Peace Blossom Boogie by The Babe Rainbow.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.